And we're back, week four of Mediocrity, where we're just okay, right?
It's been better.
We're okay. We're in week four. Holy God, we've survived 4 weeks. I'm your host, Brian Kluger, with Boomstick Comics High Def Digest, and the recently formed new radio station, K-Sky 660 AM, The Entertainment Answer. I am with Jonathan Atterbury. How are you, Jonathan? How's your week been?
Oh, it's been a really good week so far. Can't complain.
You've got a really cool Captain America shirt on.
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to keep it interesting and fresh, you know?
You are fresh smelling right now.
Thank you.
The smell is pungent.
In a good way, though, right?
And sitting in this sandwich of us is Jeremy Maygert. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man.
How are the comic books coming?
They are coming quite well.
Yeah, how's the dinosaur Battlestar Galactica?
It's great. It's busy, but it's good.
What was the name of it again?
Primal Instinct.
Primal Instinct. Oh, my God. I just have instinct to go primal all over it. You have a cool Star Wars shirt. It's a Star Wars 3D shirt. What is that? Oh, it's got all the characters from the original films with 3D glasses.
Yes, it does.
That is awesome. Any updates on Space Beards? Because Jeremy is the creator of Space Beards, another comic.
Unfortunately, no time for Space Beards right now. Pretty much all of it is taken up by Primal Instinct.
Yes. Well, we hope for Space Beards at some point, like a season two sort of thing. Jonathan, give us our social media websites and addresses. Where can people find us and tell us how amazing we are?
You got to find us on Twitter, and our handle is media_ocrity. You can go on there. If you follow us and review us on the iTunes podcast, you can win a chance or have a chance to win a download of The Force Awakens,
oh,
right?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
It's very exciting. And then you can also find us at media_ocrity on Instagram.
Ooh.
And just Mediocrity on Facebook.
Will we be posting nudes?
Maybe.
Well, we're nude now, so it doesn't matter.
Live feed
it's
of our nude show.
Yes. But let's start out with the show today with some news from Nintendo. First off, if you bought stock in Nintendo 2 weeks ago...
Oh, life is good.
Your life is amazing right now because of Pokemon Go. Now, I was too old for Pokemon. I would imagine Jeremy was way too old for Pokemon and Power Rangers and stuff like that. But
I was the prime target.
You were prime target. Did you do Pokemon?
Oh, I did the shit out of Pokemon.
Okay, so this Pokemon Go, it looks like it's like an augmented reality GPS type of thing on your phone where you can go... And it follows you around. You have like an avatar created of you, and you can go to like the gym, the restaurant, places, and pick out these Pokemons to collect, like digitally,
right?
Not in real life,
right?
But it's like a big thing. It's like
it's
taking
huge,
the world by storm right now.
I cannot open any social media without being bombarded by Pokemon Go posts.
Do any of y'all have the download for it yet?
No,
I downloaded it for about 5 minutes and deleted it promptly afterwards.
Now, because you didn't like it or because you think you'd be way too into it?
Because I didn't like it. I mean, I've got a Nintendo 3DS and I've got Pokemon on that. And I loved like the original Pokemon Blue Red kind of era. And so I do enjoy playing Pokemon games, but the app to me just wasn't really as good as an actual game that you get on this system or something.
I'm still leery on doing it because I want to try it just to be in with all the cool kids these days. But I'm over 30 and I just don't know yet. But it sounds fun.
I think you should do it at the park and just go asking the children if they've seen the Pokemon that you're looking for by yourself.
Oh, that'd be... Nope. Not going to happen. My parole officer will not like that. Jeremy, what about you? Are you going to sign up for this?
Probably not.
Probably not?
No.
But before we get to our next Nintendo topic, we wanna wish a very happy birthday to Josie Porter. It's her birthday. How old is she today?
She's 26.
26. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Josie.
Lord of the Rings likes you. But the better Nintendo news is what they announced today, probably because they just became billionaires once again.
Just throwing the cash everywhere.
Right. So if any of you grew up in the 80s or 70s, and like the first really big console besides Atari was the original Nintendo, well, Nintendo is re-releasing the Nintendo console, but this time it's going to be much smaller, it's going to be portable, you're going to have an HDMI hookup to your new TVs, and it's going to become loaded with 30 awesome games, plus a wireless controller. And how much do you ask? Ask me.
How much, Brian?
$59.99.
What a deal.
Oh, my God. It's coming out November 11th in time for the holidays. Now, I mean, you're going to get, like, all the Mario Brothers. You're going to get Excitebike. You're going
to
get...
Legend of Zelda 1 and Link to the Past.
Yes.
Castlevania 1 and the second Castlevania.
Yeah, so all of these games will be preloaded onto this, like, little console for you that you could hook up to your... badass TVs now.
Now it comes with one controller, and you can purchase additional new controllers for the NES for $9.99.
Correct.
And it's just so awesome.
This is going to be like the gift for the holidays.
Oh, it will be. It's the perfect price point because it's not $60, you know, big deal.
Right, and they've announced it today, and already it's all over social media. Everybody's wanting it. And plus with a price point like $60, it's pretty cheap.
Yes.
But there are some downsides to it. So
what are those downsides?
You were saying earlier that it's definitely not going to be able to take the old school cartridges. So if you still have cartridges laying around those old plastic bins or anything, you're not going to be able to stick them in there or, you know, do the blow
which
up
was half the fun. Let's be real.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're not going to be able to use those. But maybe in a future time, they'll be stuff for download or they'll have another system with 60 games added to it. We don't know.
Yeah.
But... there's that aspect because I mean I still have the original Contra and the original Friday the 13th game that I would love to like
the actual cartridges for those
100,000,000% I do. But I don't have a thing to play them. And like, you know what? I wonder if they're going to like come out with like in 6 months after that, like the power pad, like a mini power pad.
That, or the glove.
The glove. Oh my goodness. Because I think I'll go to you, Jeremy, because I know you're a big gamer. Nintendo was amazing for a while, but they really just fell off the earth over the past several years. And I really was hoping that they would just sell all their characters to Xbox and Sony or Microsoft and Sony so that we could enjoy those games on these better platforms. But do you think this is a way they're going? What do you think? What do you hope to see?
I never really played a lot of Nintendo games, so I don't have the nostalgia factor that a lot of dudes do. I think this is a good idea if they're going to keep putting stuff out because there was a while where... you know, they were trying to make, you know, make more sophisticated games, but they were never making machines that had the graphics that could keep up with any of the various right. generations, regardless of, like, what generation it was of Xbox or PlayStation. And so, to me, this is the best way to go. And, you know, you guys are talking about adding cartridges. I could see them maybe setting up some kind of, like, not quite as elaborate as, like, an Xbox Gold subscription or PlayStation. But to where it's like, you know, maybe you're, I don't know if those, the new little PlayStations have any kind of Wi-Fi thing, but it connects, and now all of a sudden you have access to this huge library of Nintendo
games. Or maybe you get a few games every month, something like that. Yeah. That'd be a cool idea.
Where it's like, here's their game of the month, and so you can play the crap out of, you know, Contra.
I think what Nintendo should do is just make 8-bit re-releases of modern games.
Like Halo 8-bit?
Yes, give us a Halo 8 so they can take whatever's popular instead of trying to match Xbox or PlayStation graphics-wise. Like, you know what, we're just going to do an 8-bit version of it.
You know what,
it's weird. I would buy the shit out of that.
Most of all Nintendo's games are side-scrolling, which are fun.
Right.
And like, it worked with Inside, you know, that we played recently and we talked about on the show recently. The side-scrolling games are really fun. But, you know, if you have a big party over... if you have, like, 8 people over and they want to play games, you usually go towards the older games, like Mario Parties or Mario Kart or, like, even take turns playing, like, the original Super Mario Brothers because it's easy to take turns instead of, like, Halo where you're just, like, pretty much watching somebody for 30 minutes.
Right.
So I think this is really cool. It'll have, like, get-togethers and, like, do all this. I remember playing Excitebike and making maps on Excitebike. It was just cool to see that they're doing that, and I just... I can't believe they haven't done it till then because was it recently they released those really shitty versions? Like it was like the joystick and like the little, like it looked like a little mini arcade.
It wasn't Nintendo that did that, right?
I can't remember.
I think
what
that it's like off brand.
It was off brand stuff.
Kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, where you would buy the joystick, plug the joystick into the TV, and then it would have like 8 games loaded in there.
But it's just a turd, you know, it breaks within a week.
So hopefully they do a good job with this. I mean, $60 price point is really fairly cheap. With all those games loaded on it.
I would love to see them do this with all the old systems. You know, I would buy the NES. I would buy, especially if they did it with like a Super Nintendo or Nintendo 64. Because, I mean, you know, let's be real. You could load up, there's only, I think, 60 or 80 games that were released ever for Nintendo 64. So you could load all those up in a pretty decently sized memory card.
Yeah.
And just blast them right on there. And it'd be so much fun, because who wouldn't like to play GoldenEye with an HDMI cable?
So, see, that brings up a good point that you have. So you have all these, and let's say they do that, and then other companies start doing that, and then you're going to have like five consoles in addition to trying to play Xbox One and PS4, and then whoever's playing PC. So that's a lot of gaming. I mean, that's a lot of like physical space on your home theater.
I think anyone who respects themselves as a gamer will make it work.
I don't respect myself. The Nintendo definitely has my eye. I mean, Sega CD, Sega Saturn.
I mean, yeah, that was one of the first things I thought of when I saw that. I was like, man, I wonder if there will be a Sega version of this, you know.
And so, but it's weird because the Wii, the original Wii, used to go to the market and be able to buy old games on it, and they had tons of Sega games on it. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, did Nintendo buy that Sega brand?
I don't
have
remember.
It on there?
I know Sega's not like a video game company anymore necessarily.
Right.
What I saw recently on Xbox 360, they actually had game discs you could purchase that had like 60 Sega games on it. So that was pretty cool. And even if they did that type of thing, that was pretty fun. That way you can still play the old Sega games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily needed a new console. I just want to be able to play those games on my TV.
Yeah, I was. There were some pretty some awesome games on there. I wonder, was it they made a documentary of a video game from Nintendo. Wasn't it like E.T.?
Atari.
Oh, it was Atari. Mm-hmm. So it was like, that was like
the
sought after
bomb
yeah.
ever with video. And there was supposed to be the whole junkyard filled with the E.T. copies.
Yes.
Yep. And they found it.
They found it. Yes. So good. So yeah, I wonder if that, like, Atari would hook up to an HDMI cable and you can play high def video games. Ah, it's so cool. So hopefully it works out well. There's no bugs to be started, and it's not like cheaply made. Because
yeah.
I'm trying to remember how much the original system was. I mean,
price wise?
Yeah, I mean, I was seven at the time, so I definitely didn't buy it. But
and you know,
it had to be $100-$200.
I don't know. $200 would have been a shitload of money back in 1985.
Yeah,
that would have been like paying how much now? Like $400 or something like that with inflation.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's how much they are.
Yeah.
So we look forward to it. We hope to review it for you come November if we're all still around. We don't know what's going to happen. There might be a zombie apocalypse. We don't know, but that's what's going on. Quick thing, since we are mediocrity, we like to talk about all the nerd stuff. There was news that Javier Bardem, who was in Skyfall and who was in the Coen brothers movie as Anton Chigurh. What's his name? What was that movie called?
No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men.
Which was fantastic.
Yes. He is slated to play Frankenstein.
That's exciting.
In Universal Monsters. How awesome is that?
I'm way more excited about that than I was to hear that Tom Cruise is going to be in The Mummy.
Well, I like Tom Cruise. I like Tom Cruise. I like him a lot. But what do you think, Jeremy? Do you think...
So is he playing the monster or is he playing Dr. Frankenstein?
I would imagine he's playing
the doctor. I think he's been cast as the monster.
Yeah.
Is
he a monster?
Cool.
Okay.
Not so.
Well, all I see is Frankenstein, so then I always wonder, like, is he Dr. Frankenstein?
Or is he a monster?
Is he Frankenstein's monster?
He could be both. I like him. He's that good. What else? That was cool. I'm excited for it.
I'm excited for it.
Universal Monsters haven't been around in a while. I guess Benicio del Toro tried to do the werewolf one.
That sucks so bad.
Oh, man, that movie was brutal.
Yeah, that's why like I'm cautiously excited about these new versions, because the last good thing any of the Universal Monsters did was The Mummy, the first and second Mummy movies with Brendan Fraser.
The last one good one they did was Monster Squad. They had them all there, and it was perfect.
You didn't like The Mummy?
I saw that movie was on Netflix, and I was like, I kind of want to rewatch that, but I'm not going to just because I don't know if it's going to hold up.
No,
does it hold up great?
100%.
Okay, I'll watch it.
I remember watching that just going, why wasn't this more popular? It's a great movie.
There are virgins in that? Virgin sacrifices in that? My God.
It's a good time.
It is a great time.
All American fun.
Yeah, and it has a killer soundtrack and music to it. Rock Until You Drop. Yeah. You know? And that brings us to our next segment. Music and film. Scores, soundtracks, what we like, what we don't like, what we want to see more of.
That was a smooth segue there. I like how you did that.
Oh, thank you. Are we not becoming mediocre anymore? Is it still mediocre?
I think that was a high point in mediocrity.
That was a high point in mediocrity?
We might just deflate back down. It shows all downhill from there.
Yeah, if you can't see me, one time we're going to do a video podcast, but I was stroking my fake beard because Jeremy and Jonathan both have beards, and I don't have one right now. Their beards are pretty awesome right now. It would take me 2-3 days to grow one like that. Well, so I just haven't yet.
Just maybe a long nap.
A cat nap. One day I'll be able to stroke the beard. But yes, the music and film. Let's talk about that. I feel like today, okay, let's roll back.
Hold on, take a breath.
Hold on. The 60s, the 70s, the 80s. All had impressive movie soundtracks. And we're just talking about scores. We're not talking about songs. We're talking about scores, instrumental stuff. They really brought the music to life. And what I see more often than not today, especially in superhero movies, are like the very, it's like an Inception movie-like score where it's just like, dung, dung, you know, just like loud sounds and just darkness and everything, and there's nothing that really sticks out. And that's one of my main complaints of all the Marvel movies and like Avengers is that there's not a great memorable score to any of them,
except for the first Captain America movie, because that one has a fantastic score.
Interestingly enough, if I'm not mistaken, the guys that made that movie, Joel Johnson, like those guys all, I think he like was the guy that designed Boba Fett, and I think he worked on like two of the Raiders movies, so it's not surprising that that's like that guy's got the one Marvel movie that has, you know, that's got a theme to it.
Yeah, because, like, one of the best themes were, you know, all of John Williams' stuff. From Star Wars to Superman, Jurassic Park, E.T.
He's the master.
Schindler's List. You know, all of that's really good. But you have, like, Howard Shore. You have, I'm dying here. But there's so many. But what do you guys think, what would you want to see more score-wise? Do you want to see more of, like, an 80s, like, vibe to it? Do you want to just be more memorable? Do you want something? I don't know.
See, I want more memorable, and I feel like for me, when we're talking about doing this, when I start thinking about the Bale Batman movies, that to me is the point where I feel like the superhero movies started to have less of a theme, and especially with the second one, where there's even less of a theme, and I feel like that's when you have the introduction of kind of like, anytime the Joker was on, you know, they wanted him to seem crazy, so you kind of had this, like, dissonant, rumbling, you know, kind of sound, you know, instrument going on. And ever since then, that's just been so prevalent. And I feel like those movies were kind of the beginning of not really having, you know, a real kind of score going on in the background and a theme for the movies.
And what do you think? What do you...
I like anything that's memorable and or fitting for the mood. Like, I can think of one movie that was fairly recent that I thought had a really cool soundtrack, and that was It Follows.
It Follows was great because that brought all the synths back, you know, kind of like from the Goblin era and, like, you know, those old horror 80s movies. Yeah,
those 80s horror movies, but it was just nostalgic enough to give you that kind of timeless vibe.
Right.
But also, it didn't totally sound like an 80s soundtrack. It was its own unique thing, but I thought that was really well done, and I loved it.
Coming back. It's like the whole, like, one of my favorite composers for movies is John Carpenter. He's also a director, you know, but he also composes, like, Halloween, The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China.
Right.
They're excellent, and it has that synth vibe to it. It has all the synths in it, and, like...
Yeah, and I'm just not necessarily a huge synth fan in and of itself, but if it's done well, then I enjoy it. So I thought that they did a killer job with that. But like Jeremy, I like to see more exciting stuff that's themed, memorable stuff. You know what I mean? Like, if we're talking Harry Potter or the Tim Burton Batman movies, those all have these really perfect themes that you can almost just sit down and hum without even having to
think
about it.
Because Danny Elfman is a genius.
He is.
And he really... You know, it's funny. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about specifically 1989 Batman. You were one year.
I was three.
You were three. Jeremy was 48. I was... I was eight. Just kidding.
He was 50.
But that was... Yeah, he was 50. It was the year of Batman. And we all finally had a Batman movie to call our own. All our comic book dreams came true. And we had an excellent score by Danny Elfman. However, Tim Burton, the director, decided to give Prince free reign of the music. And we have Prince doing music for Batman. We have Bat Dance. We have so Party good. Man. What do you think? Did it add to the movie? What do you think? It still holds up because I love those songs, but it's just weird for a Batman movie.
It doesn't make sense when you say it out loud. But it when you watch the movie, it doesn't distract, and it's not as much that those songs are playing in the background the way that Danny Elfman music does. They're actually part of the movie. They're in scenes because it's like it's when he's vandalizing the museum, he's playing a Prince song and dancing to it. When he's throwing the cash out to the crowd, then he's playing a Prince song. So to me, because it's more of a part of the movie as opposed to, you know, a score going on in the background.
I mean, that's some kind of genius to, like, put those two together.
Right.
You know? Because I guess, I mean, Tim Burton really wasn't anybody at the time. He had done Pee-wee's Big Adventure and maybe Beetlejuice. But he wasn't who he was today. You know, he was still a relatively new director. And then Prince, of course, was pretty popular.
Danny Elfman was pretty new at that time as well, wasn't
he? Yeah, because he was coming right off of Oingo Boingo, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting because that's one of the greatest soundtracks ever is that Batman, because even Elfman's score throughout is so dark and brooding, and at the end of the movie, when it's like a lighter note, it's like just like a half a key up, you know, but it's the same theme, but it's like, oh, there's like a sort of a happier vibe to it.
Right.
It's the same thing, and it was really cool. But yeah, and Prince, I mean, I love Bat Dance. There was a fad I went through where every place I went to where there was a DJ to ask for them to play Bat Dance, and nobody ever did. And I was very upset about it for a few years. But I love that. And it's you do a good point, Jeremy, on that's just, you know, it's played on the speakers as, you know,
a part of the movie.
Literally, some guy turns on a boombox and
that was perfect.
Dance.
That was a perfect way to do it.
It was good. Yeah, it was great. And that's just one of many. We just talked about monsters.
Oh, and if you think about it, like with that movie, it's like when you have a loud, flamboyant Joker, it's like, what else is he going to listen to?
From
that time, he's going to listen to Prince.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was his perfect, because he was the gangster. Out of all the Jokers, I think he was like an old school Godfather type gangster, Jack Nicholson, and
old school gangsters listen to Prince.
Yeah, that's right. No, but I mean, when he
John Gotti loved,
you know, whatever.
But I think like he was after he became the Joker, he became crazy and like it was just him, just like Toonie, you know,
went from Tony Bennett to Prince.
Yes, it was good.
I would love it if they would bring back Danny Elfman for the new Batman movies that they're doing.
Yeah, no, that would be...
I think that would be a great touch.
Because Hans Zimmer, I think, did the last three Batman movies. And I mean, I could sing you their theme in my head. You know, that... You know, it's like the... When he's... Like, getting... What, was am I wrong?
No, it was good. It was really good.
It was horrible.
It was like I was watching it.
It was mediocre. But I remember, like, the scenes when Batman's pumping up and you hear that. But other than that, it's kind of a difficult score to really pinpoint. Whereas the original Batman, it's like, oh, I hear that, and absolutely,
you know,
that's what it
you
is.
Know, I think it's one of the things that with the DC movies, they're talking about making them closer to the comic books. I feel like they need to start, you know, bring Danny Elfman back, let him do a score for Batman, and then it's time to reintroduce the Superman theme.
The John Williams one.
Yes. Into that, because, you know, with how Man of Steel ends, with what happens to Superman when he comes back in the next movie, I feel like that would be your absolute perfect time to play that,
yeah, see, that's
to
what,
play that little bit, the kind of quieter version of the Superman theme, and I feel like it would just like blow people away.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping, because I mean, even though Superman Returns, which was like the fifth sequel to the original ones before Man of Steel, I think it was in Superman Returns you got like a hint of the John Williams score, but definitely not in Man of Steel. It was more of, you know, that dark, brooding, loud noises thing.
Ambient like, sound.
Yeah, and... That Superman sound, that da 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 da, and you're just like, oh my god, it's happening, and that pumps you up, because I think music is a vital part to film.
Oh, it is. It's a vital part to life.
So it's I hope to see that John Williams comes back, because he came back with the BFG that's in theaters now with Spielberg.
Was that a good soundtrack? I haven't seen it yet.
Obviously. It was good. It was a good soundtrack. Hold on, water.
He killed it with The Force Awakens, man.
Oh, he did, man.
That was a great soundtrack. And if you buy it on vinyl now, there's like a hologram they put on it that it spins around with TIE Fighters. It's really cool.
That is cool.
But let's talk about songs. People that make songs for movies specifically, minus Prince and Bat Dance. But
there's, so not the score, but actual songs for movies?
Yeah, there's been tons of them. There's, let's see, well, there was Monster Squad. There was Critters with like The Power of the Night, Terrence Mann. Do you remember those movies from the 80s?
Nope.
Not many. Well, there was The Goonies, Cyndi Lauper, Goonies Are Good Enough.
That's true. That was a great song, and too. Let's be real.
Do we see that more often than not?
I feel like you see it now, but I feel like the only reason it's now is it doesn't really have anything to do with the movie. It's just so they can sell soundtracks.
Hey, what about the song Enya wrote for Lord of the Rings?
That won an Oscar.
Yeah, that's a good one. But like now, I feel like for the most part, it's things like Rihanna's got a song for Star Trek. It's like when you had one of the Spider-Man movies, I forget which one, Nickelback had.
Yeah.
Song. You know, and it's like, and to me, 90% of the time, it's stuff like that. It's like,
I feel like it's the production studio, the executives.
It's completely replaced. It's like literally disposable.
And let's, you know, one thing that I've been disappointed in, because you can't really talk about songs for movies without addressing Bond films.
Yes.
And their intros, because that's just every Bond film has the Bond song, right? And I think that all of those lately have been shit. Since the
Adele,
one
Skyfall,
I thought it sucked.
Dude, that was an amazing song.
It did not fit the vibe at all, in my opinion.
I thought it did.
I hated it.
How did you hate that?
I don't like the song. I think that it's not a good song, and I feel like
the lyrics are rough.
The lyrics are lame.
The lyrics are like a nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
It literally, like, everything rhymes to the point of where it's predictable.
And there's just no punch to it. There's no balls in that song. It's very mellow, and it's like it wants to be a powerful song, but it's not. There's just no power to it, in my opinion.
See, I liked the other one, the Jack White, Alicia Keys one, too, they did for
Bond. I hated that one also.
I would have liked that one if Jack White hadn't have sang in it. I feel like it should have been just Alicia Keys, and then take out that weird thing in the middle where they're like singing together, but with that, like, not words. Like, just take that out. Just let her sing those chorus and verses over.
It was Die Another Day, I think, what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the best one of the recent Bond films was the one for Casino Royale.
Okay, who did that one?
What's the guy from Soundgarden?
Chris Cornell. That's
right.
Chris Cornell did that, and it was amazing. I still enjoy listening to that song, just as a song that I'll throw in just on my headphones or something. I think it's a fantastic and exciting song.
So what's the best Bond song, then, besides that one?
For me, it's GoldenEye.
GoldenEye? Ooh. A Pierce Brosnan one.
I like the Chris Cornell song, but I just always feel, and even in every case, I feel like that Bond songs should be sang by women.
You think so?
I think so. That's the way I think it should be. Because do you know who wrote the GoldenEye song?
Who?
Bono and The Edge.
Really?
Yeah, they wrote that song.
Oh, that's interesting. What are you looking up?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was Goldfinger.
Okay.
Is my favorite one.
Not Goldmember.
I think Beyonce. The Goldfinger theme kind of embodies the classic Sean Connery Bond 60s sound
okay.
and feel. And I like that.
You like the old school feel.
I'm a Sean Connery Bond fan. I mean, I like them all pretty much.
Roger Moore.
I like Roger Moore.
T-Dalt.
I think Timothy Dalton was a great Bond, actually. I think that they just needed to give him... I think he was just the wrong Bond for that era.
Okay.
I think that he was truly a great Bond.
He would have been a great grittier. Bond in the modern movies.
Yeah, because okay. he's grittier, he's bloodier. It was awesome.
Okay, so here's a question for you, since you're both big Bond fans. They're doing another one. I hope, I mean, it won't happen, but I hope Idris Elba becomes the new Bond, but it won't happen. Who do you want right now, currently, to sing the new Bond song? Who would it be?
That's a really tough question.
Because you'd obviously pick a woman. Because you said you like a girl singing it.
Man, I don't know. I'd have to look. I'd have to do some.
Not Adele, not...
No.
Not Pink, not...
No.
Christina Aguilera.
I'm trying to think. I mean, honestly, like, as far as modern female singers go, there's not a whole lot that I keep up with currently.
I mean, Aguilera has pipes. She can do it.
She has pipes, but she doesn't have any good content.
Well, that's why you give her a Bond song.
Most of those people aren't writing those Bond songs anyway.
Yeah. But I mean, she doesn't, you know, but it just seems like the songs that she picks aren't necessarily good ones usually.
Okay.
I don't know.
You don't know? It wouldn't be like Maroon 5 or something?
God, no. Get the fuck out of here with that. Yeah, let's just have Chad Kroeger and Nickelback do it while we're at it.
Everybody would riot, I think.
I don't know, man. I can't think of any modern people.
Tom Waits do a Bond song.
Ugh.
You don't. Oh yeah, you don't like Tom Waits. No. That's right. You're so weird.
Can you think of anyone? I'm totally blanking on who would be the perfect singer for a Bond song nowadays.
Well, maybe we'll ask this question on social media.
I know who Josie would pick. I'm blanking on her name.
Who does she sing? What does she sing?
Who's the singer that she likes that you don't?
Oh,
I don't know.
We went to the concert, but it got canceled because of like mad thunderstorms.
Oh, okay. I know who I would vote for, actually. I don't remember the name of the singer, but the girl from...
Who is it?
The girl from the Dead Weather.
Oh, the Kills from the Kills.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't remember. Alison Mosshart.
There you go.
Alison Mosshart. I think she could actually make a really good Bond song. In fact, just have the Dead Weather do it, because I feel like Jack White is talented, just not when he's singing. I just hate him singing.
Just not when he's singing.
Not when he's singing, and not when he has too much control over the songwriting.
Do you think, like, somebody like Metallica could do a good version of it?
No.
Really?
Not especially not modern Metallica.
We had the name of the Bond song. It was Another Way to Die.
Another Way to
Not
Die.
Not Die Another Day, because that's right. A different Bond movie that had Halle Berry in it.
Was Die Another Day Madonna, the Madonna one? It might have been, because I know she did a Bond song. Yeah, you're right.
I was like, wait. I just realized that we had that backwards.
And yes, we're mediocrity.
Madonna did the song for Austin Powers, Beautiful Stranger, right? That was a song that she wrote for them.
Yeah, but she also did a Bond song, too.
I don't know.
She did.
We have no idea what we're talking about.
Josie's pick would be Lana Del Rey for a Bond song. I think that'd be a pretty good fit.
I feel like they would go Katy Perry route or something like that.
I mean, Katy Perry's a good singer, but I just don't. I don't know. I don't think it would be the right vibe.
Yeah, because I think they'd feel like they'd pick a pop star right now.
And even though it's like, even like with Adele, like Adele didn't write the song. She helped write the lyrics. But then you have somebody, they bring in somebody who's very good at like composition and scores to write those tunes. You know?
Right. But the Chris Cornell one was just, it had the right energy. You know, you watch that movie, because I want to hear the Bond song and be excited. I want to be like, okay, I'm ready for a bunch of ass kicking now. Just get it out of the way, and I'm ready.
That would be,
It Bond, primes my pipes.
Yeah, we could talk about Bond for hours. And like one of the recent movies that came out that had a really good soundtrack was Deadpool. Deadpool had a lot of really cool songs, like a lot of old school, like DMX and Shoop. Who song Shoop? I want to say TLC. Salt and Pepper. There we go. They had the George Michael song in it and the Calendar Girl song in it. I mean, that it's
a lot of fun music.
Yeah. So, and you know, in every Disney movie that seems to come out or anime movie, they usually seem to have really good soundtracks too. And there hasn't really been an animated film in a long time that's like Lion King or Beauty and the Beast, where a lot of the movie was musical. And I miss that. I miss that
as well. The old, like,
there was Frozen.
There was Frozen.
Frozen and Tangled. Now, the new one, Zootopia,
had one song.
Yeah.
Shakira.
But it was less like, it wasn't like where it was music-centric, where it was like a moment where the characters are singing. And then,
right.
Yeah. Same thing for Big Hero 6 didn't have one either.
That's true, but yeah, Frozen was how long ago? Like 5-6 years ago?
Something
that's
like
a long
that.
Time ago. It's almost like
it just always seems so omnipresent. I feel like it came out last year.
Yeah, I know, right?
It just never goes away. I was like,
they definitely make a joke about it in Zootopia about Frozen.
Yeah,
really?
Just let it go. Yeah.
You sing some insipid song and your dreams magically come true.
Yeah, just let it go. So that was funny.
One film soundtrack for a cartoon that I want to talk about a little bit was the soundtrack for the Hobbit cartoon.
Oh, the Hobbit. I remember that.
That was a great soundtrack. And it's, I mean, I've got that. I own that movie and I love it. I just don't get it. You know, it's got that really great, silly really old folk music, and
which is good.
It's great. I mean, it's good, but it's terrible at the same time. You know,
it's like there's like a sense of nostalgia.
It is. You watch it, and you can't even. I can't even stay awake through the whole thing because it immediately just lulls me to sleep.
And to go off that, I mean, the recent Lord of the Rings movies from Peter Jackson. That's like 16 years ago. Those scores were fantastic.
Top
one
notch.
Of the best themes ever.
Yes, those were so good, and it pisses me off that they're not on vinyl. Like they have not been released on vinyl yet. All I want to do is listen to the Lord of the Rings score on vinyl so bad.
While masturbating.
I want to hear Hobbiton.
That just seems odd that that's not on vinyl.
It's weird. Well, you know, those came out, in 2001, 2 and 3, or 2002, 3 and 4? That vinyl was not being made back then. That was one of the, from the 90s through early 2000s.
But I would just expect that to have eventually been, remastered, and then one year it's just going to be Record Store Day, and it's like, the release of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Trust me, I've been emailing people. I've been writing letters.
To your congressman?
I have.
Ted Cruz just won't get it done. I don't understand what his deal is.
That's what I've been doing.
Priorities, people.
Voting him out for this.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but the Hobbit, the original Hobbit, the cartoon version was really good. I like the Secret of Nim and, all the Ralph Bashki stuff. They're all really good.
Yeah.
And, you have to bring up, a good one, Shaft. Isaac Hayes, he won the Oscar. If you don't remember, if you weren't old enough, Jeremy was old enough, probably when Isaac Hayes won the Oscar for Shaft, he was on the Oscar stage at the Academy Awards, full leather. Did the whole Shaft theme. It was so amazing. It hasn't been recreated since.
You know what show's got a really good score? It's been rewatching all the Batman animated series on Amazon. And man, it's like every episode is like got a score to it.
So that's funny you bring that up because Warner Brothers sent me the Volume 2 soundtrack of all the DC Comics superhero TV shows and movie themes. It's Volume 2. You can buy it on Amazon right now. It's from Warner Brothers, and it's awesome. We listened to it a little bit earlier, but it has the 1940s Superman radio show stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. It has the Brave and the Bold from 2002, which sounds like a lot like Firefly to me. It's got a guitar, the Brave. It's really cool.
The Song for Jane.
Correct, Song for Jane. And then you have the new one, the one with Brandon Routh in it right now, the Legion of Superheroes. Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Legend of Tomorrow?
Yeah, Legend of Tomorrow. That's on there, too, on Volume 2.
We're talking about the Flash one.
The Flash from 1990 TV series. The theme song to that is on this soundtrack. And we listened to it. And I remember watching that because it was only on for a season or two. But the theme song is straight from, Batman Returns.
Batman Forever.
Or Batman... it was Batman Returns, the second one, right?
Yeah, I thought it sounded more like Batman Forever.
Forever? It sounded exactly like a Batman. We'll post it on our social media so you can listen to it. But it is, it sounds exactly like the Batman. Yeah, it is crazy. But you get all the old cool radio show entrances and themes. You have the Superman theme from the 80s. You have all the Batman, the Brave and the Bold, the Flash, and it's really cool. So if you're into superhero themes, you want to see what it was like in the 60s and 50s, because, the Robin theme from the 60s sounded like soul, like Black Power type stuff. It was really cool. Funny. It was like Isaac Hayes did it. But yeah, go on Amazon, check it out. If you type in DC Volume 2 Superhero Soundtrack, you'll find it. It's really cool. But I want to talk about my favorite soundtrack that I always go back to. Luckily, I found it on vinyl, because it's fairly hard to find. It's even rarer to find it on CD, but it's a movie called The Explorers, and it was by Jerry Goldsmith, the soundtrack, it got you into that magical place where these kids built a spaceship out of a tilt-a-whirl, and when that happens, you're just like, oh man, this puts me in the moment, and it's when themes are like that, when they really amp that movie making up for you. That's where it is for me.
I agree.
About for you? What about you? What are your favorite themes that you always like to go back to, as far as music theme-wise, movie soundtrack? See, I mean, Sound of Music is excellent to me. I still love listening to Sound of Music. I love all the songs from that.
So we're talking themes?
Themes on soundtracks. Give me both.
It's less for soundtracks for me. For me, though, the only thing that when I think of soundtrack offhand recently is, The Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. you know, that's a pretty good soundtrack. But I don't tend to retain soundtracks. I tend to retain scores more than I probably do soundtracks. And for me, you know, it's you know, probably just rotates between Superman and Star Wars and Indiana Jones. You mean just
all the John Williams?
You know, I mean, because those are ones that it's like you hear them, it's just like, man, it's like you just remember them forever.
And it's weird because, you know, most people don't listen to classical music.
Yeah.
And these are can be considered classical scores and compositions.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, Star Wars is probably the only classical composition where people will know actual different themes minus the main titles.
Mm-hmm.
They will know Leia's theme. They will know Dagobah and
Luke's
Yoda.
Theme,
they know
everything.
Luke's theme. They know the Imperial
Vader,
March.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could probably do that with Lord of the Rings a little bit, but not like Star Wars
ever.
Yeah.
And I feel like with the Williams themes, you know, he's one of the few guys that can, you can hear three notes of something and it produces an emotional reaction,
yeah.
Literally.
And I,
with 5 seconds of music and you respond emotionally to it.
I get emotional every time I hear something from E.T.
Like, yeah.
I really do. It just hearing the music just does it to me.
I agree. It's just goosebumps. That's
yeah.
what it is. It's Goosebumps City and everything. Harry Potter. Harry Potter, the first one, really did that for
That's
me.
That's John Williams.
Yeah, I mean, everything John Williams touched back in his prime, and even, like we said, Force Awakens, I can't speak for BFG, but he's just the master. I don't think it gets any better than Williams.
Yeah, he's damn good. So, Star Wars, for you.
One of my favorite soundtracks, in fact, I put in my top five actual scores, not soundtracks, is the score for Bram Stoker's Dracula.
The 1991 version
with
Keanu
Reeves.
Yeah,
that has
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah,
writer. Look at you.
In many ways, it's a flawed film, but it had a fantastic score.
It really was good.
It was moving. It was gothic. It was creepy. It was perfect.
That's a Universal monster too.
That is, and that was a damn good one.
Yeah.
That was, but that came out before the Mummy movies.
That's true. It was like early 90s. God, I was like 10.
It was like 91, I think, for something like that.
Yeah,
but
I remember that score. That score is a really good one. And so that is on vinyl, but it's hard to find.
It is. And that guy I forget the guy's name that did this score, but he hasn't done a lot of other really huge movies.
Yeah.
He seems to kind of just pop up every now and then, but what a talented guy. I also love the soundtrack for Liar Liar.
I don't even remember the soundtrack to Liar Liar. The Jim Carrey movie?
Yeah.
I don't even remember that. You have to tell me.
Rewatch it because there are themes, there are everything, and it's just exciting. It's perfect for the movie.
Yeah, it's true. It is pretty perfect.
I don't even remember that. What's in it? Tell me.
It's all classical. It's
okay.
All like classical strings and stuff like that, and it's just, it almost, in a way, reminds me of the score for the Goonies film. You know, bump, bump, bump. Bum, bum, bum,
that's
bum,
Dave Grusin.
Bum, bum. Okay,
Dave
something
Grusin,
like,
yeah.
It might even be the same guy. I don't know, but it has the same kind of vibe and fun feel to it. But
it literally is almost like that score is like written to Jim Carrey's body language.
It is. It's perfect.
I mean, just like every moment of like just how everything going on, just like the score is just perfect.
And it makes it emotional because that's such a ridiculous over the top movie. But there are scenes when you're like, it's so touching, you know?
Yeah, like Back to the Future theme is excellent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite soundtracks was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It was like that pure 90s, early
90s. The score or the soundtrack?
Soundtrack.
Okay.
That soundtrack with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you had, you know, Two Heads Are Better Than One and Big Pig singing, the first song of the movie, I Can't Break Away. That was the epitome of those early 90s rock songs.
And then the second one, you had the it ends with the
Kiss
tune, God Gave
Rock and Roll to You,
but actually benefited because they brought Steve Vai or somebody, I think, in to play guitar. So it was like, you know, way better instrumentation over it.
Which isn't hard to do.
Not hard to do. But it's like all of a sudden, like, shredding amazing solos, like, over that song. And you're like, oh, that's actually way better.
Oh,
what about the soundtrack for Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
That is one of the better in so long. I have that on vinyl. I have that on MP3.
I love it. It's Beck that did the songs for the original songs for it.
Nigel Godrich and Beck. Yes.
Right. And it's
both
so good.
So let me ask you this. In a case where we're talking soundtracks and scores, when you have a movie that's about music, where you have something where it's like Crossroads, where it's like all about blues music, and then you have like the Commitments, where they're not musicals, but they're movies about music. You know, how do you guys fit that
into
How do you guys fit that into the score or soundtrack discussion?
I mean, because, I mean, some of that, I mean, you have Spinal Tap and Blues Brothers. Those are some of the better ones ever made. And you have Almost Famous, which
you
is
did
also,
your, you did your movie list, and Amadeus was on there, and I was like, oh, good. I was like, good call on that one. I kind of forgot about that movie, and I read your list, and I was like, shit, yeah.
That's a great movie. Moulin Rouge also, I think, has a fantastic soundtrack.
That's, I mean, I like it, but that's off of my
I go
list.
Full, I commit fully when I hear the Elephant Love Song medley.
Like, I commit fully.
I have no shame.
Why do you commit fully to
because
that?
It's fun as hell to sing. I don't even care. I'll do it by myself.
I commit fully to that. Oh, we're going to record that one day, and we're going to show our audience just how fully committed he is.
It's really fun.
But yeah, we let us know on our social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, what your favorite music is from movies and soundtracks and scores, and we'll try to put some stuff up for sale that we find on the social media links so that you can relive your stuff on vinyl. But we're going to move on to our last section. And this is something I used to do with an older podcast, The Multimedia Men. But we're going to do it on Mediocrity today. This is where we're going to recast a movie. And if you've tuned into us before on the podcast, it's a lot of fun. It's basically, you know, we live in a time now where pretty much all your favorite movies are being remade. I saw Ghostbusters this week. They're remaking everything. Ghostbusters, we live in a time where everything's being remade. So why not us, Mediocrity, us three dudes, give the studios some suggestions? So if these movies, we don't want these movies to be remade, but if they were...
I think Escape from New York could stand to be remade.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to do Escape from New York.
When you mentioned it, I was like, man, how has it not been remade?
It's crazy that it's not. And side note, Boom Studios, a comic book company, is releasing a comic book series where you have Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China and Snake Plissken from Escape from New York teaming together, both Kurt Russells fighting something. It'll just make everybody explode, I think. But that movie, Escape from New York, is just, it's so wonderful. You have John Carpenter, you have Kurt Russell, you have Isaac Hayes. It's just a cool movie. But I feel like, yes, it came out, was it early 80s, 70s, 79? It's an older movie. Times have changed. They could remake it. I think we have some suggestions, and we'll go through each character, and we'll all decide on the best pick.
All right.
And then we'll post it online with pictures and everything. So we'll start. We're not going to start off. We're not going to blow our wad just yet.
Got to work ourselves up.
We have to work
bit.
Ourselves up. So let's start with Cabby. He was the guy who drove the crazy cab, who was like, it was fully reinforced. And he was played by an older, well, younger back then, Ernest Borgnine.
Mm-hmm. Still pretty old back then.
Still pretty old back then. So he was the cabbie. He was funny. He was, you know, a little disheveled. I mean, everybody was, but cabbie. He was fun. He showed up a few times. And my pick, I think Jeff Bridges would be an excellent cabbie. Jeff Bridges. I can picture him seeing coming up and just not knowing what's going on. Just like, let's get to the next scene.
Good drink here, man.
Yeah. Got a beverage here, man. But that, I'm going with Jeff Bridges.
I like that. That's good.
What do you got, John?
I got Judi Dench.
Judi Dench is a cabbie.
I'm going to just completely go a different route.
John flipped it on its ear and went, Dame Judi Dench is cabbie. I'm changing my vote right now. You heard it. I'm going with Dame Judi Dench. You have to beat that.
Oh, man, I can't beat that. I didn't go super deep cuts with that one. I just went with Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen. You just be talking about dicks and everything.
I know. I was like, well, if he's in it, then there's probably a pretty good chance maybe the movie gets made. So I was like, let's just go with him.
Yeah, let's go with that. I'm going with Dame Judi Dench. Yeah. My hand's up there.
All right.
Judi Dench is cabby. I like it. All right, let's talk about the president. The president, of course, was captured in the original movie, and he was played by the amazing Donald Pleasence, who was also in the Halloween movies. He was also the president of the United States here. I went kind of serious with this role just because the character is kind of a dick. I went with Josh Brolin.
Okay.
He's older now. I think he could play kind of a scared guy and then also just not wanting, just full-on asshole at the end.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome. I went Josh Brolin, but I'm open to other people.
Jeremy, what you got for this one?
I went Robert Duvall on this one.
That's pretty good. I can see that.
He's an old guy, too, right now.
Because I kind of wanted somebody who's like who like had like an older like presidential feel, you know?
Okay. No, I like Robert Duvall. He loves the smell of napalm in the morning.
I went with Bryan Cranston.
Ooh!
I think that he's got the dynamic range to be scary, be scared, be presidential, be all those things.
Was Cranston the president in the remake of Total Recall?
He wasn't the president, but he was, like, the head of the organization.
In charge of the organization. Okay, all right. I can see that. I mean, I like Bryan Cranston.
I think he'd be fine.
I can give up on Josh Brolin. Ooh. Do I want Bryan Cranston or do I want Robert Duvall? I'm going to go with Bryan Cranston for me. I'm going to go with Bryan Cranston.
I like my Bryan Cranston.
You're doing
answer.
Well so far.
All
you're
right.
Too. Oh, well, I mean, so would you? Are you still going with Duvall for this one?
Cranston's cool.
Cranston's cool. Cranston's cool. All right. Cranston so far and Dame Judi Dench. Jesus H. Chrysler. All right. Let's move on to Brain, who is played by the iconic Harry Dean fucking Stanton. That dude was in a Avenger movie or a Hulk movie or whichever one it was. He's like, son, I believe you have a condition. He was an alien. He was good. So Brain is, he's kind of like, he's the skinny guy. He's kind of nerdy. He knows everything. I feel like David Tennant, the Doctor Who guy, would be perfect for Brain.
That's good.
My pick as well.
Really? Same page. Harry, or David Tennant.
I went with John Turturro.
Nobody fuck with the Jesus.
Yes.
As Brain.
I think that he would be perfect.
Would it be John Turturro playing it, or would it be John Turturro playing the Jesus playing Brain?
I'm open to either, because he has the range, I think, to pull that off as well.
I mean, that would be awesome, but I think David Tennant owns this role.
I vote with you guys on that one. I'll give you the David Tennant.
That's great.
Especially because you're twinsies on it. It's cute.
David Tennant. Yeah, I can't believe it. We did not talk about this before now. All right, so we have Cabby, we have President, we have Brain. Let's get to Maggie. Originally played by the amazing, beautifully breasted Adrienne Barbeau. I mean, if you grew up in the 80s, there's no way you didn't jerk off to her. There's just no way. She's so hot. So I had two picks. I mean, Adrienne Barbeau in this movie, she's awesome. She's a badass. She's hot. And I think either Olivia Wilde or Charlize Theron could do the part justice.
Those are good picks. I actually went with Mary Louise Parker.
Ooh, as an older pick. She's really, she's like mousy.
But I like her. I think she's
like her too.
Off.
Yeah. I mean, she was great in Weeds. She was great.
Because I don't need her to be like Red. Rough or anything to be capable. I think that if you watched her in Red, we saw her as she grew into her own character, and especially in the second one.
Okay.
And, I think that she'd be great. I like her in everything she does. And she's older, but still like super hot.
Oh, I know. I agree. She is super hot.
I went Ava Green.
Ava Green. Ooh, I'm going Ava Green. She was hot in Sin City too. And she was in your favorite TV show just that ended recently.
Yes.
On Showtime. I'm going Ava Green with that. That
pretty
would be
much hot and everything, and I figured that in a remake like this, there would probably be some nudity.
Yeah, no.
That's always a bonus.
I would do Ava Green. I'm doing that. I like Olivia Wilde, but I'd go Ava Green. What about you? You going to stick with
yours? I love Ava Green. I think she's amazing and super attractive. I don't know if she would be right for the role in my mind. I might actually change my mind to Olivia Wilde. Okay. But I've got a theme going here, and it's going to make more sense when you hear my casting for Snake. So okay. I'm going to stick with my answer, but I do like Olivia Wilde.
All right. So you have Olivia Wilde. We both have, what's her name?
Ava Green.
All right. So we'll ask on social media, but the next one, we got to talk about the Duke, played by Isaac Hayes. That dude drove like a Cadillac that was decked out like as like a pimp living room. It had lamps on it and chandeliers on it. It was crazy. Who doesn't want to drive like that? But Isaac Hayes, sadly, is no longer with us, and we have to remake it. So I have three people in mind here.
Man, you got to choose.
I do. So I'm going back and forth between Samuel Jackson Forrest Whitaker and The Rock.
Oh, I thought about The Rock. I almost cast
But The
him.
Rock is too silly and cartoony, and I just won't believe him, I don't think.
Yeah, that's why I didn't get cat picked.
And I think Forrest Whitaker would be awesome. Sam Jackson would, I think, would be funny in the role. I'm going with Forrest Whitaker.
Okay,
Forrest Whitaker in the Duke role, because I think he would be a bad motherfucker.
Jeremy?
I felt like the kind of like marquee choice for something like that would be like Idris Elba. But the guy I went with was Michael Coulter.
Which one? Who's Michael Coulter?
He is Luke Cage.
Oh, okay.
In the Jessica Jones series, and he's in the Halo 5 game.
Okay. All right.
So I went with him.
All righty. I like that.
I'm rolling with Common for this one.
Common?
That's good.
I think Common would be awesome.
Common's a good actor.
He's a great actor, and I think that he would have the vibe down pat.
You can look up a Common interview on boomstickcomics.com. We've interviewed him before.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, yeah, that would be cool.
I think that he would have the vibe.
Good call on that one.
I'm still going with Forrest Whitaker for me.
I'm sticking with Common.
You're sticking with Common? What about you?
I'll go with Common. I almost wanted to go Drake just to fuck with you guys. I couldn't bring myself to actually do it.
Don't even say the word.
Drake.
What, voice of a generation? What is your problem? I couldn't do it.
Forrest Whitaker. Come on. Ghost dog.
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. So, Snake Plissken, you're never going to... I mean, my first choice would be Kurt Russell again, but it's not going to... We have to recast it. So...
But do you, though?
Unlike Jeremy, I put Idris Elba as Snake Plissken.
That's a pretty good call. I like that.
I put Idris Elba as Snake Plissken. He would really just fucking own that role and not give a shit. The other person I wrote down, but when I thought of Idris Elba, I exited out was Stephen Lang, who was the bad guy in Avatar.
Oh, okay.
You know, with a big scar across his
face.
Right. I think he'd be cool, but Idris Elba, Snake Plissken, yes.
I'm going with Hugh Jackman. I would love to see a Hugh Jackman Snake.
So, he basically, it's like Wolverine. He's like the same, it'd be like the same thing, but longer hair.
But let's give it more gore and make a Wolverine movie that we want to see. Just give him guns instead of claws.
But I just want a Wolverine movie. Oh, Hugh Jackman is, oh man.
I think that he would...
You're going to have to sell me on that.
I think that he has the grit and the... Because there's not a lot of guys that I think that have that kind of dangerous element about them while still being believable as a hero.
So Hugh Jackman and Common, Judy Dench.
And Mary Louise Parker.
And Mary Louise Parker. Okay. All right. I'm not sold on Hugh Jackman.
What'd
not
you
me
say?
At least.
Oh, man. I went pretty standard. I was like, I just put The Rock in there.
As Snake. So we were back and forth on that. Mm. We were on the same page here a little bit.
I mean, honestly, you know, we had two Jeff Bridges in Tron. We had young and old. You could do it.
With Kurt Russell.
How many times have you seen, you know, Patrick Stewart in an X-Men movie where they've just digitally ironed out some of the wrinkles? they even did it to Frodo in the Hobbit movie. I mean,
Kurt Russell is still awesome. I mean, he was great in Bone Tomahawk.
He's about to be in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, he is. No, I agree.
So that was actually where I was wavering. I was like, okay, do you just let Kurt Russell do it and then just, you know, digitally tweak it up or, you know.
No, I think, because we were talking about remaking it, and it would be a sequel if he was in it. And I really wish, because Kurt Russell still looks pretty decent for his age.
Yeah.
And he could totally still do the role.
Agreed.
But I mean, if we were recasting, because I thought of The Rock.
Mm.
And I just think The Rock is so, he walks into a room and he like lights it up. He's like, the spotlight's on him. And that's not Snake Plissken. Snake Plissken's kind of the dark in the corner. He's like, he has some okay lines, but I feel like The Rock is just kind of... sillier. Like, I think,
agree. He's more of a comic book character.
The Rock is sillier, but I feel like there's just few actors that when I watch them now just own action in the way that he does. Like, I watched Central Intelligence recently.
It's excellent.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, it was kind of okay as a movie, but like, every moment where he's doing any kind of action, regardless of whether it's the bar fight, or it's the scene in the garage, or, you know, in the office, where it's like everything he does, he just nails, and it just, like, he just owns action so hard that, like, every time I watch anything action, I'm always like, I just, you know, I want more of that.
Yeah, no, and Central Intelligence is a silly, stupid, fun movie. They really got it. Mm. It's silly, stupid, fun. I'm sticking with Idris Elba. I think Idris Elba is the perfect Snake Plissken.
I agree. I'm going to give you that one. He's a really good casting.
My God. Just to see him walk in there and just not give a shit. Because we haven't... I mean, if you watch The Wire, yes, he does. I mean, his character in The Wire, Idris Elba's character, Stringer Bell, gives a shit, but he's a gangster. But Kurt Russell's just... aura of himself and how he conducts himself, like, he just doesn't care if he dies. He just goes for it. And I think Idris could totally pull that off.
Which is like his role in Luther, kind of, to a certain extent.
Yeah, and Luther's an excellent show. Version. Yeah. And like, it'll be so good. I don't know. I'm sticking with that. What about... Do we convince you on that?
Yeah, I'm down for
it. You're on that? All right. We'll post it all on social media and what we thought, but we'll post pictures and...
So who are the winners? The main cast that we've
got
here.
Cast, so we'll go through it real quick as a recap. We have Cabby as Dame Judi Dench. So amazing. The president. Who's the president?
Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston. We did agree on that. We have Brain is now David Tennant. We have Maggie as Ava Green. We have the Duke. Who did we pick as the Duke again? Who was that?
I don't think we
didn't really settle.
We didn't settle on that one.
I think it would probably be Common.
Common?
Because I'm voting for that one, and I think... voting for
all right, I'll give you Common.
Okay, so we got Common for that.
Common / Forest Whitaker. Don't combine
No,
themselves.
No, it's just Common. I won.
And then Snake Plissken is Idris Elba. I'm going to tag you, Idris Elba, on Twitter and Facebook, so hopefully you can pull some strings to become Snake Plissken.
Because we all want to see that.
That's
the world we want to live in.
Yes, that is the world we want to live in. And that wraps up our episode 4 of Mediaocrity. It was a fun show, guys.
It was fun. Make sure to check us out on Twitter, Media_Ocrity. Same thing with Instagram. And give us a follow.
Yeah, we'll be on Facebook soon. We haven't had a Facebook page
yet. Let us know who's doing the soundtrack.
Yeah, let us know who's doing the... Oh, soundtrack. Let's just bring back John Carpenter. It'll probably be Maroon 5, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, M83. You know, M83, they did the soundtrack to Oblivion.
I think if we're going to go for a perfect movie, let's just have John Williams do the score.
Okay, I'm down with that.
If we're shooting for the moon, you know.
We're shooting for the moon, okay. All right, good. Well, that's us. We're Brian, Jeremy, and Jonathan. Three dudes. In a podcast.
And two beards.